You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. Thanks for being here. I'm Keely Boltina. Coming up, we're talking to a physician who says the state's pediatric intensive care units are full of babies who need oxygen. That's because of RSV. It's a virus that causes cold symptoms in most people, but is really serious for our most fragile. What do you want to know about RSV? Give us a call now at 800-642-1234. You can also email ideas@wpr.org. That conversation is still ahead. First, new regulations on firefighting foam with PFAS chemicals are headed to Governor Evers' desk after the state assembly approved them back on Tuesday. We're getting a better understanding of what PFAS are and their health risks. UW-Madison environmental engineering professor Christy Rumacall recently broke down the basics in a piece for wiscontext.org. She talked to the Ideas Network's Judith Sears-Poisson earlier this week.
Let's start with the basics. What are PFAS?
So PFAS is a term that stands for per- and polyfluoroalkyl substances. It's a group of over 5,000 or so synthetic chemicals. These chemicals have a lot of valuable properties, and they're used in a lot of different applications. So they can make surfaces non-stick or waterproof. So they're used in things like furniture, carpets, paper products, things that we use every day. They're also used in firefighting foams and many industrial applications as well.
We often hear PFAS called forever chemicals. What does that mean exactly?
So they're called forever chemicals because some chemicals that fall within this class do not have any known natural degradation processes that happen in the environment. So chemicals like PFOS or PFOA, scientists don't know yet if they break down at all in the environment. We estimate that they last a really long time.
Whereas some other chemicals might be broken down by, say, sunlight or some other things that they come in contact with in the environment.
Exactly. My group works on other kinds of chemicals like pesticides, and they can be broken down by microbes or sunlight. As you said, there are other processes, and these chemicals don't really degrade by those kinds of mechanisms.
You mentioned some of the ways that we see PFAS being used, for instance, in Teflon coatings, nonstick waterproofing. There's also the big area of firefighting materials. Tell us a little more about that.
Right. So PFAS have been used in firefighting foams mainly by the military and airports, but they're also used at sort of your regular fire station down the block. They help. They resist really high temperatures, and so they're really useful. They make firefighting foams more effective. And so we often find contamination of PFAS in sites, you know, near airports or military installations because of the use of these firefighting foams.
How long has this group of chemicals been used widely?
That's a really good question. PFAS have been in the news a lot lately, but they've actually been around a really long time. So some of them have been used since the 1940s and 50s.
And apparently for decades, they were used a lot. When did the risks first become known and points of concern?
Right. So they've been used a long time. I'd say scientists started measuring PFAS in the environment in the early 2000s. That's when people in the research community and other groups sort of started noticing that these chemicals were being found everywhere. And some of the concerns started coming out about them.
And what are some of those concerns? What are impacts? Let's start maybe with human health.
Right. So it's important to remember whenever we're talking about PFAS that we are talking about thousands of chemicals. Some of them have very well documented health effects, and some we really don't know very much about at all. So some that we know a lot about are things like PFOA and PFOS. These have been linked to a variety of health effects, including things like thyroid disease, decreased fertility, pregnancy issues, immune response issues, and increased cholesterol. There's also some evidence of certain types of cancers, primarily among people who had high exposure, so occupational settings.
I think I remember reading that virtually everyone in the United States has some PFAS in their bodies. Is that correct?
Yes, that is true. I mean, we use these chemicals in many different applications, and they also build up in your body with time. I guess once they're in your body, it can take years for them to leave again. And so, yeah, that's sort of one thing we're worried about is that the sort of constant exposure to them, they can build up with your body in time. And so, yep, pretty much everyone in the U.S. has some PFAS in them.
And how are we actually taking those chemicals into our bodies? I mean, I know that they're used in a variety of products, but what do we do that then makes us susceptible to having them inside us?
Right. The main route of exposure to humans is ingestion. That could be, say, food contamination. So if you have like a microwavable popcorn bag that has PFAS in it, you could get it through your food. Drinking water that's contaminated with PFAS is a big concern. So if your water source has PFAS in it, that's a really important route of exposure. Or fish that live in contaminated environments can be another major route of exposure as well.
I certainly hear a lot with fish, especially or seafood, about mercury and other contaminants, but PFAS is one of those that we should be aware of as well.
It is. The DNR came out with some fish advisories, or they're coming out with it, related to PFAS contaminations measured in fish in Starkweather Creek, which is located in Madison. And so that's something I think we'll be seeing more of in the future.
We're talking right now with UW-Madison Environmental Engineering Professor Christy Remickel. She recently broke down the basics of PFAS chemicals in a piece for wiscontext.org. So we talked a little bit about the impact on human health, and we talked about the fact that it can be found in animals like fish. What about other environmental impacts?
All right, so this is something that we work on, is studying the fate of these chemicals in the environment and where they move around and where we need to look for them. These chemicals, because they can dissolve really well in water, they move around in the environment. And so one thing we're looking at, our work is focused up in the Marinette area, looking where these chemicals end up in surface waters, so rivers, Green Bay, Lake Michigan, and also the concentrations in sediment. There are lots of ways they can move around in the environment.
So that area around Marinette was a big focus because of the Tyco factory, mm-hmm. I believe, and the firefighting foam that contaminated water locally. For people in other parts of the state or even in other parts of the Midwest, how does that translate into a risk for their own water sources?
All right. So there's a lot we don't know. I mean, the DNR is doing a lot of testing and looking for contamination. I think we'll find more of these chemicals the more that we look for them. So I think it's just, people knowing that this could be a potential issue and sort of finding out what's in their own water as much as possible.
And water processing plants or filtration plants take care of a lot of things that can be harmful to human health, but this is not one of the things that gets screened out.
Exactly. So sort of traditional drinking water treatment processes are not designed to remove these chemicals. That being said, there are sort of commercial methods for removing PFAS from water. So things like activated carbon or reverse osmosis can remove PFAS from water. And these can be used either at the municipal scale or at the point of use, like at the home scale. So there are technologies available that do work for removing the chemicals.
Christy, in your research into PFAS, has there been anything that really surprised you that you found?
Our work is really just getting started. I'd say one of the biggest surprises in general in sort of my area of work is that the measurements that we make in the lab don't always match up with what's happening in the environment. And so to talk about PFAS specifically, and this is not my work, what others have seen is that if we look about how much these chemicals end up in the sediment, so the sort of sand and rocks at the bottom of a lake, we actually find a lot more there than you would predict based on laboratory measurements. And I've seen this with other chemicals as well. And I think this is really an important reason why we should get out of the lab and make measurements out in the field, because things happen in the environment that don't always match what happens in the lab.
And what are some of the challenges of studying these chemicals and then potential efforts to regulate them?
So one thing that's been really challenging and why this has sort of gotten a lot more attention recently is that these chemicals are hard to measure. We're talking about really low concentrations here. You have to use very precise methods. And these chemicals are so widely used that you have to be very careful with background contamination. The instrument that we use for measuring these chemicals, we had to switch out a bunch of parts that had PFAS in them in order to make our measurements. And so there's a lot that goes into doing the methods, and you have to be really careful with it. And that we kind of as scientists are just kind of able to do that really well in the past decade or so. So that's one thing that's a challenge, but also is why we're able to sort of make progress with it now.
And as we wrap up, are there places around Wisconsin that are trying to be more proactive in dealing with the potential health issues and environmental issues related to these chemicals?
Right. I mean, that's a really good question because, you know, there are regulations that are being sort of going through the rulemaking process in Wisconsin, but we don't have regulations on the books for these chemicals yet. And so there are some utilities, like the Madison Water Utility is a good example. They've been making measurements in all of their groundwater wells and reporting that data. And I think they're being really proactive about making the measurements and telling people what's there and kind of dealing with the results of that. But I think that's a really good thing. If you kind of have to find out if it's an issue, that's the first place to start.
Well, Christy, thanks so much for taking the time to talk with us.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
That was Christy Remicall, an associate professor in the Department of Civil and Environmental Engineering at UW-Madison. She talked with the Ideas Network's Judith Sears-Poisson about her PFAS explainer, which you can find at wiscontext.org. Up next is news. Then we're talking about a virus that makes it hard for babies to breathe, and sometimes it puts them in the hospital. So have you encountered RSV this season or maybe sometime in the past? Perhaps you've had a child or know someone who's had influenza. What are the particular challenges that you've faced? Share your experience with us now at 800-642-1234. That conversation is just ahead. I'm Keely Boltina. This is The Morning Show on the Ideas Network.